Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Yud Aleph BeElul, Parsha Shoftim, Tashinayin Vav, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 15 September 2016. Webcasting from Israel, where the top story today was what the Enlightened hailed as a landmark defense deal, which was not so big on inspection and a cause for worry. The number of $38 billion was splashed on the headlines of the newspapers today. That is the number of dollars promised to Israel over the next 10 years, which means $3.8 billion every year versus the current $3.3 or even $0.5 billion every year. Not such a big increase. But Israel also signed off on depriving Israeli defense industries and their workforce of some of that money. Most of the current aid, that Israel receives is by American law spent in the States, but not all of it, so it's really no gift at all, but a boost to American labor and defense industries, not to mention the collaboration of Israeli military engineers and mines with their American counterparts to the benefit of both countries. Besides this new innovation, which has Israeli defense employees anxious, there was also in the ceremonial signing yesterday a scolding, as usual, for Israel. It is functionally as routine as a Sunday morning mass. Obama the liar said, quote, "For as long as the state of Israel has existed, the United States has been Israel's greatest friend and partner, a fact underscored again today," close quote. That's not true. The United States was not Israel's greatest friend in the beginning. For the first two decades, its greatest friend was France. The Six-Day War was fought with French armaments. It was only after the Six-Day War that America became Israel's good buddy. And the world was swept up in the amazing victory, and everybody wanted to be Israel's friend at that time. And then over the next year, for example, in the States, Senator Robert Kennedy led the charge in Congress for selling phantom jets to Israel, first major weapons deal. And that was the start of the close relationship. And for his leadership on the first anniversary of the Six-Day War, while pushing for the phantoms, an Arab shot Bobby Kennedy dead for his friendship on behalf of Israel. And as Obama lied, there was this functionally ritual scourging of the Jews with words, if not whips. Obama went on to say, "Ultimately, this memorandum of understanding and efforts to advance the two-state solution are motivated by the same core U.S. objective that has been shared by all administrations, Democratic and Republican, over the last several decades, ensuring that Israel can live alongside their neighbors in peace and security." The two-state solution, indeed. Likewise, National Security Advisor Susan Rice was there in attendance and spoke some words. She, too, brought up the need for the two-state solution, which makes one suspect that post-election Obama is likely to try and stab Israel in the back via a Security Council resolution, like the ones passed against South Africa. He will, of course, claim at that time to be the most generous American president towards Israel in the matter of war materiel and other cash assistance. But, of course, what is that when compared to his gift of $150 billion to Iran and permission to build an atomic bomb to destroy Israel, God forbid, after Obama leaves office? Still, he is likely to announce that for Israel's own good and to compensate the victims of Zionism for his generosity this month to Israel with this military memorandum, he will say the United States recognizes the state of Palestine, which then automatically turns Israel into a foreign occupying power that has no right to be in the new state of Palestine. Obama yesterday sang out about the relationship between Israel and the U.S., which is unshakable, quote, unquote. And Susan Rice said this deal will ensure that it will always be in Israel, today, tomorrow, and for generations to come. And as usual, I don't believe a word either of them says. Obama's latest use of the term unshakable friendship with Israel has no more credibility than if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. What an interesting pair they make, President Obama and his first Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who will be remembered in history as two birds of a feather for being similar, chronic, nonstop liars. The two of them have gone through life lying, and it's shocking how spineless the American people became when confronted by these two off-the-charts liars and influence peddlers, this traitor posing as a patriot, this Lady Macbeth consumed with ambition to be as powerful as a man, who will say and do anything, will lie, smash cell phones, delete files, anything, to forge ahead and be elected the first woman president of the United States. This is a woman of no principles, no ideals, no ideas for how to improve the lives of the people of the United States. She has had no serious accomplishments as evidence of her ability to be commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces. In her one and only closest event to being a commander of troops in the field, that was 4 years ago this week in Benghazi, and she blew it. But she still believes she has the right stuff, to borrow from Tom Wolfe, to be commander-in-chief. This woman is living a lie, and not surprisingly, she's been living a lie all her life, and it's just extraordinary how many people still want to vote for her. Like Obama, who likewise had done nothing in his life to merit his election as president, versus his rival at the time, tortured and broken in body by the commies in Vietnam, old John McCain, who could not compete with the big, handsome, slim, confident black man who spoke like a white man. People voted for an image. Worse, when it became known he had sat for 20 years in that Church of Hate Whitey and listened to that preacher, Reverend Wright, who used to be a black Muslim alongside Louis Farrakhan, I, for one, thought, for sure, the American voter will not vote for this man now. And boy, was I surprised to discover that nobody paid any attention to this information. They voted for the man they saw on the TV screen, as today they vote for Donald Trump, who they also saw on the TV screen during his own run as a talk show host and whatever, his glorious self on display, pretending to be a successful businessman, when Senator Bill Bradley the other day, former senator, said he thinks Trump decided to run for office in order to escape looming bankruptcy charges. The American people have become zombies when it comes to judging people, judging their president, this advance man for the penetration of Islam into American life in order to ultimately take it over. Today we were told that Obama wants to bring in another 100,000 Syrian Arabs, refugees. It's America's duty, he's likely saying these days. It's who we are, to take in all these new Arabs, mostly Muslim Arabs, and do it in the name of humanitarian assistance. And I say this is just a convenient smokescreen for him to insert even more Muslims into the United States in order to destroy it from within. I saw it myself, I think. 2 years ago, I was in the States for my annual break, and when it was over and I was back to JFK for my flight back to Israel, Reliable El Al recently rated the worst on-time airline in the big leagues, informed us there would be a four-hour delay, thank you very much. So I headed for the waiting room, and there was a mob, hundreds of all kinds of Muslims in their native dress, and I thought this is the future, thanks to this enemy of Americans in the Oval Office. Which brings me to the link posted for this webcast. When we break for the first musical interlude, perhaps, open another browser and download this link, this article posted by the excellent Sultan Kanish on President Teddy Roosevelt, who in the first decade of the 20th century expressed his views on Islam and polygamy. And try not to weep when you read it about how, and as we see how different the country is these days in its discourse and views of Islam. Turns out that T.R. was very much in the mold of a contemporary of his in England, albeit a few years junior, Winston Churchill. In 1905, as Sultan Kanish tells us, Roosevelt expressed himself on Islam, though he omitted the circumstances. I'm sure it was the Perdicardis kidnapping in Morocco at that time. American was held for hostage, held as a hostage, and Roosevelt sent warships to threaten major violence if he was not released. What Churchill had to say about Islam is in my book, and Roosevelt sounds very much like him. Check out this piece of history on this link and see what the great Republican President T.R. had to say about Islam, about polygamy, and the necessity of blocking the entry into his beloved USA of people who do not participate in American culture, who share its feelings, its beliefs, its values, share its disgust, in his terms, for polygamy.
טוב שבשמיים אדון תבל מורי אלי יהללו חלב שפתיים כוכבי מרום ימים אלים אבי הטוב שבשמיים אדון תבל מורי אלי יהללו חלב שפתיים כוכבי מרום ימים אלים אבי הטוב ליבי ידעת שוקט נסער נכנע מורד לב זה לב בין אליך אתה תפילה עיסה תפילת אמת אבי הטוב ליבי ידעת שוקט נסער נכנע מורד לב זה לב בין אליך אתה תפילה עיסה תפילת אמת חלפו מאז נולדתי בשר נרדף נסחף כושל מכאוב אכזר יגון ידעתי ללא מחר ללא גואל ביקשתי אור ליבי העיר לי אך לא אני זכיתי בו דרכי אליו שוב שיקיר לי ומשבשה אני הוא פה ביקשתי אור ליבי העיר לי אך לא אני זכיתי בו דרכי אליו שוב שיקיר לי ומשבשה אני הוא פה ביקשתי רחמי שמיים אני סילקתי לא וכן ואז ידעתי אין כאן שניים בבן האב באב הבן אבי הטוב שאין מידה לו לא דמות לא שם אדון תבן במקום תפילה בנך שיר בלו הלל לך, הלל, הלל אבי הטוב שאין מידה לו לא דמות, לא שם, אדון תבל במקום תפילה בנך שיר בלו הלל לך
Yeah, this Obama guy's a menace. Under the cover of humanitarian assistance, he will have imported into the United States, during his 8 years in office, some 1 million Muslims, none of whom is looking to shed his Muslim identity and adopt an American attitude toward life. Islam knows only one way to deal with people who are not Muslim, and that is to be their overlords. Islam means submission, and the whole world must ultimately submit to the truth and rule of Islam. Historically, immigrants to America, besides looking for a better material life, wanted liberty and freedom from discrimination, often for their religion. America became a haven not only for Jews abused by Christians and Muslims, but Christians abused by Christians. Huguenots, French Protestants, abused by Roman Catholics abused by Protestants, Protestants abused by Protestants. Jefferson's time, Quakers couldn't spend the night in Virginia. Protestants like the Church of England, whose treatment of the Puritans led them to flee to Massachusetts Bay. Some historians say it's a mere coincidence that the first phrase of the First Amendment to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, mandated the absence of a government office regulating religious life, and because most of the former colonies, now states, had an official church that varied from colony to colony, the framers of the Constitution decided to do away with that institution altogether because there were literally dozens of Christian sects having no office of religion. No religion would be better. Official religion, that is. But yours truly is not a normal American historian. I disagree. I don't think it was an accident. I see the hand of Hashem at work, which made for the no establishment of a religion clause, which is so misunderstood in our time. In any case, the amazing tolerance in America between different faiths is treasured by all. Islam, though, these Muslims Obama's flooding the country with, know nothing of this value. No less a horror on the horizon will be the sexual attacks on American women by these Arab Muslim immigrants. This man Obama is a malefactor of major proportions, the likes of which the world has rarely seen. He's the greatest secret agent in history to penetrate to the wheelhouse of the enemy ship of state, seize the helm, and drive it onto the rocks. So I hope you all read this wonderfully informative story from Sultan Kanish about Muslims and polygamy 100 years ago plus, and how Americans thought a century ago, and how different the population is today, and how similar this situation is to life in Israel today, where there's a distance between the people who were here a century ago and today, and the difference is night and day. On Monday, Minister of Education Naftali Bennett spoke in Kesaria, in English that's Caesarea, at a 40th anniversary meeting of the Tali Fund, Education Fund, which is a conservative movement program directed at Jewishly ignorant Israeli Jews, to give them a taste of something Jewish, who said Israel should not only excel in high tech, Minister Bennett said in his speech. A year ago, he announced great emphasis on mathematics and science for everyone. This time, he said, in addition to high tech, to engineering and science, Israel should also excel spiritually. And that means greater emphasis on teaching the basics of Jewishness, the Jewish religion. He said, quote, as a high-tech powerhouse that exports culture and innovation to the entire world, we must also be a spiritual powerhouse and export spiritual ideas to the whole world, as we did in the past. This is the next chapter of our Zionist vision. This is how we will return to becoming a light to the nations, close quote. Very nice, and not surprisingly, Meretz, the far left, MK, Michal Rosen, said Jewish studies, citizenship, and Jewish heritage are important, but Bennett's interpretation of Jewish studies would only come from the Orthodox perspective, which would teach religious coercion, nationalism, and intolerance, close quote. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the non-religious, namely anti-religious view of classical Jewish ideas and behaviors that has kept this people alive like no other in history. For such types, classical Jewishness preaches religious coercion. That's a lie worthy of Obama and Hillary. Michal Rosen also said that Orthodoxy teaches nationalism, as if that is a terrible thing. This is a sign of the underlying egocentric, narcissistic type who hates large group identities because that very identity impinges on their sense of total freedom and lack of responsibility for others in their universe. Nationalism is the highest form of social organization. First there is a couple, Adam and Eve, then there are offspring that form a family, and then the family becomes an extended family, and then there are clans and tribes, provincial identities, and ultimately a nation that embraces all of them. It took four and more centuries for all of the peoples of Europe, as we know them in our time, to congeal as nation-states. It's apparently in the nature of things that man develops to this highest form of social organization called a nation. Only leftists like Michal Rosen think that they know better than nature, the nature that Hashem has created. Thus did leftists decide that the family unit was inherently oppressive. Friedrich Engels, a Marxist collaborator, wrote a book on the family and its power structure, so that in Israel, the kibbutzim, the wise men and women of socialist Zionism, decided it was better to remove infants from the care of their parents and turn them over to the collective. The collective will raise them. And never mind that the institution of the family is truly multinational, transcultural, international, and even found among many animals. The leftists know better, though, and here is M.K. Rosin, fearful of teaching nationalism to Israeli children as if that were a bad thing. It leads to, in her mind, hating others, like the ancient Palestinians victimized by her countrymen. Once upon a time, the left stood for certain economic ideas. Today, it is just more narcissism, characteristic of a nation in decline. Last week, Ehud Sheva reported that on JTV, which started last February in London, comes out of the UK, the head of the Henry Jackson Society interviewed a spokesperson for B'Tselem, Sarit Michaeli, who refused to call B'Tselem a terrorist organization. Playing some kind of stupid word game, she said Hamas has, yes, committed terrorist attacks, but that still does not make the organization as a whole terrorist. In my book, I cite a communist Jew here almost a century ago, after the massacre in Hebron, who said, a revolution, meaning the Arab resistance to Zionism, sometimes needs a pogrom to make progress.
רצון להתרחק מעט מהמציאות הזאת הבועה הגיעה אותך מתוך וכבר נכנסת לאחרת הדרכים אל המבצע ששמר אותך פחות ברורות
של
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Speaking before of that anti-Jew Jewess, the Israeli Sarit Michaeli, another anti-Jew Jew was in the news last Thursday. At Georgetown University's prestigious School of Foreign Service, there was a panel discussion, though its title was absent from the report of it by Rafael Medov. There, Dennis Ross, the famous peace processor who never succeeded processing any peace, opined that Prime Minister Netanyahu should be taking steps toward peace, quote, even though negotiations with the Palestinian Authority won't work now, close quote. Excuse me? Negotiations won't work now, but he wants to see Bibi taking steps toward peace? But he's not doing that? He said Netanyahu does not want to make the difficult choice between his domestic interests and what the international community expects, close quote. What an empty and stupid thing to say. Bibi must make the difficult choice between domestic interests, like presumably defending his people from the wilderness of Muslim maniacs that surround us, and what the international community expects. Dennis, of course, holds that in high regard. What the international community expects is the eviction of 500,000 Jews from homes and communities that they built and paid for. And Dennis obviously thinks the expectations of the international community are superior to Bibi's, what should we call them, parochial domestic interests of protecting the country. And I find it fascinating how Ross, this international affairs expert, does not know that there's no such thing as an international community. They are only individual states out for themselves, with no allegiance to an imaginary international community. Medef reported, quote, Ross took particular issue with the existence and expansion of Israeli settlements in Judea-Samaria and the Jordan Valley, saying that Netanyahu should, at a minimum, announce a policy, an official policy, that there will be no further Israeli construction east of the security barrier, close quote. Yeah, Dennis, this is in direct contradiction to the Oslo papers that you so loved 23 years ago on the White House lawn, according to which the life of Jewish people inside the already existing communities would not be disturbed or curbed. And that means, after 23 years, there's a new generation of toddlers in these communities who need more classrooms, and we need more medical clinics and markets, etc. What Dennis Ross was proposing, if followed, was a duplication of the Warsaw Ghetto that was so inhumanly packed with Jews driven from their homes. Dennis proposes no building for these growing Jewish communities. Twice, Medoff reported, Ross said Israelis need to realize that they can't get peace on the cheap. Translation, they must pay for it. Buy off our neighbors who applaud when their youth murder our youth. Israel must pay for peace, he says, when the truth is exactly the opposite. With people who demand what these savages demand, there can be no peace because they're not interested in peace. Just thievery and the pleasure of bleeding Jews and making them cry. Like an extortionist who comes back to his victim, who paid him the first time, and even the second, Arabs demanding payment for peace today will break the peace when they want more from their pigeon who submits to their blackmail. Ross also said that Obama sees himself as a genuine friend of Israel, the kind of friend who does not let his friend drive drunk, close quote. Yeah, Dennis, Bibi is a drunken driver, but his good friend Barack Hussein will take care of him and make sure he does the right thing, because Barack Hussein loves Israel and knows better. Dennis Ross is a fool, a contemptible betrayer of the Jewish people, and above all, just plain stupid to say and believe the things that he does.
צדיק אמיתי עלה על הדרת פנים ואזכה שתזדקך חוכמתי בשלוש עשרה מידות שהתורה נדרשת בהן ועל ידי זה יזדקך כל רינתי אכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך מהונך כבד השם מהונך אל תקרא מהונך אלא מגרונך 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 כבד השם מגרונך 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 כבד השם מגרונך כל רינתי ואכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך מהונך כבד השם מהונך אל תקרא מהונך אלא מגרונך כבד השם מגרונך, 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 כבד השם מגרונך.
Okay, that's it for this evening and this abbreviated week. I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Eretz Yisrael.